Welcome back to the second hour now of the Shattering Myths program. I am your host, Yana. Yesterday, we returned answer a Christian apologist, which led to a question. The statement by the Christian apologist said, "You talk of Jesus." Now, as you know, I don't talk of Jesus. I know the name is invalid. There is no Jesus. There is a Yahusha, but when you speak of Yahusha, that is an entirely different individual than the mythical Jesus. Being a Torah observant, and amend to that, this person says with an exclamation point, although they have no concept what being Torah observant means. However, what does that have to do with what you or I are capable of? So he is saying that the fact that his Jesus was Torah observant has nothing to do with him. So I guess the example that was set by his Jesus has no bearing on his religion. Now, there's pure hypocrisy if I've ever seen it. But he's also saying that we are not capable of observing the Torah. And by the way, all you have to do to observe the Torah is to read it. If you're reading it, you're observing it. That is really all observe means. If I want to observe my wife have a meal, I sit down across the table from her and watch her eat. And I'm observing her eat. Observation is all God asks of us as it relates to his Torah. The fact is, whether you like it or not, as Paul rightly states, the law was our schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. Of course, now everything of that is the opposite of right. Paul was a false prophet. He spoke against the Torah. He misquoted Yahweh. He established his own personal gospel. And Torah does not mean law. It means teaching. It means guidance. It does not bring us to Christ because Christ in Greek means drugged. What this means, now this person now is trying to define what Paul said, and that's what every Christian has to do. They have to interpret what Paul says because what Paul says is so contradictory and so convoluted that Christians make a career out of saying, well, what this means is that you and I cannot fulfill the requirements demanded by the law. Jesus alone could fulfill all of its requirements. So the issue there is, what does fulfill mean? And what the religion of Christianity would have you believe is that to fulfill means to do away with. And so that he fulfilled and therefore did away with the requirements. So that Jesus alone could do away with its requirements because he doesn't see anything of the Torah applying to him. So all of God's teaching, all of his guidance in the presentation of the covenant in the Bereshith, in the presentation of the means of exiting from human oppression, in Shemoth Exodus, all of the presentation of the unique path that God has provided from our troubled world to his home in the book named Called Out, which is Akata, corrupted to Leviticus. All of the words that were inspired by God in Devarim, which has been renamed Deuteronomy, all of that teaching does not apply to the Christian. We can discount all of it because Jesus alone could fulfill all of its requirements. So what does fulfill mean? Now, yesterday in the program, I did explain that God said only one Torah shall, let's get the verb correct here, only one Torah has and shall always exist. It's Haya, was, is, and forever will be for the naturally born person and for the visitor from different countries and cultures. And so, in Shemoth names, Exodus 12:49, God is saying that there's only one Torah, and it has and shall always exist on behalf of everyone. But whether you be a naturally born Yehudim living in Yisrael, or you are a Goyim, a Gentile, someone from a different race or place. meaning that God's testimony regarding his Torah is the antithesis of the Christian perspective. But this was the phone call we received at the end of the show yesterday. What is the purpose of the Maaseiyah if the Torah is still in full effect? Jason from Pennsylvania asked that question. Well, to understand that, what we have to do is to understand that there is no if here. Remember, in the program yesterday, I shared with you this statement from Yahusha as it is recorded in Matanyah, Yah's gift, Matthew 5:19. Yahusha said, "Do not assume that I have come to weaken, to dismantle, to invalidate, to abolish, or to do away with the Torah or prophets. I have not come to do away with it, but instead to completely fulfill it. Truly, I say to you that until heaven and earth shall pass away, not one jot or tittle, that's not one part of one letter of one word that comprises the Torah and prophets, shall be passed by, shall be ignored or disregarded from that which was established in the Torah until such time as it all happens. Therefore, whoever dismisses, invalidates, or does away with the terms and conditions, or teaches people to do the same, as is this Christian apologist based upon Paul's teaching, they shall be called the least dignified in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever performs them and teaches them, they shall be called the greatest and most important in the kingdom of heaven." So it really boils down to here, what is your definition of fulfill? And the Greek, we can look at the word pleroo, P-L-E-R-O-O, but doing so has its liabilities, because Yahusha did not speak Greek. This was not originally recorded in Greek. And so he spoke Hebrew, and therefore he would have said Torah and mala as the verb. But should you be interested, the Greek verb pleroo means to fill up, to make full. It is not the Greek word for ending or abolishing something, doing away with something. Mala, which is the Hebrew word for to fill up, to fulfill, to increase, speaks of increasing, of being productive, and completing a task or an obligation. It is even more instructive in this regard, and that's the language that Yahusha spoke at this time. Written in the pictographic language of ancient Hebrew, mala was comprised of a mem, which is descriptive of waters. Waters are the symbol for not only the source of life, but also for cleansing. Followed by a lamed, which is a shepherd's staff. It means to guide, to direct, to nourish, to protect, and to lead. By the way, it's interesting to note that the mem in Hebrew, with the waves upon the waters, looks exactly like an M in English today. And the lamed, which was the shepherd's staff, looked very similar to the L in English today, just showing how one alphabet has influenced the other. And that lamed does, as a shepherd's staff, mean to guide, to direct, to nourish, to protect, and to lead to. And then the final letter is an aleph, the first letter in the Hebrew lexicon. The aleph showed the picture of a ram's head. It spoke of the power and authority of God, and of God as our Father. Both Al and Ab being the first word in the Hebrew lexicon, is comprised of the Aleph and the Beth in Hebrew. And which is the Aleph and the Lamed, is the Hebrew word for God, for the Mighty One. So when you look at M-L-A, Mem, Lamed, Alf in Hebrew, pictorially, the word means it's the power to lead to the cleansing and of the life that comes from the waters. It speaks of the source of life and cleansing, and of a shepherd guiding us to and leading us to the power and authority of God. It isn't just happenstance that all of this points directly to the Messiah's role as the one who enables these Torah promises. All right. Just now that we know what the word means in Greek and in Hebrew, let's look at what fulfill means in English, because that's really the argument. Christians think that by fulfilling the Torah, that their Jesus did away with it. He completed all of its obligations. We don't have to pay any attention to the Torah anymore because their Jesus fulfilled it. So does fulfill mean to do away with? To complete in such a way as to do away with? Now, it can't be that in this sentence because of what we will consider here in a moment, but here are the definitions of fulfill as they appear in English dictionaries. The first and primary definition is it is a transitive verb to do what is necessary to bring about or achieve something that is expected, desired, or promised. And that is precisely how it's intended here. It is the Messiah is engaged in doing what is necessary to honor and to enable the promises that Yahweh has made, that we desire, which enable us to become his children and to be saved. And God, because he is reliable, does what is expected because he honors his promises. So fulfill here is doing what is necessary to bring about or achieve something that is expected, desired, and promised. The second definition is a transitive verb to do what is necessary to carry out a commitment to the very letter of the agreement. So if you establish an agreement, the covenant, then fulfill would be to do what is necessary to carry forward, to carry out that commitment, to do everything on your end that you have agreed to do right to the letter. This would get right back into the jot and tittles of the Hebrew letters that comprise the Hebrew words that comprise the Hebrew Torah teaching. We move on to the third definition, where it is a transitive verb to be good enough or the type necessary to meet the standard or requirement. Now, when we return, we'll discuss what that means, that Yahusha was good enough, and he was of the type necessary to meet the standard or requirements of the Torah. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We were talking about the crossroads between Yahweh and Paul. This is the fulcrum upon which you either choose to embrace Yahweh in his Torah teaching, and therefore embrace Yahusha, or you choose to part company with them, with Yahweh and Yahusha, regarding their view of the Torah, and choose instead to side with Paul. This is the crux of it, and the operative term here is to fulfill. And so we looked at what the word meant in Hebrew, which was the language this message was conveyed in, and in Greek, which is the language it is now recorded in. And we find that in neither language does it fit the necessary Christian perspective on fulfill in the sense of completing or doing away with. But we're going down and talking about each of the definitions of fulfill because it answers the question that Jason asked at the end of the program yesterday. Why, if the Torah is still in full effect, is the Messiah, Yahusha, necessary? Because if the Torah is able to save, as Yahweh claims, why did he need to send the Messiah? And we are addressing that really through this concept of fulfill and what fulfill means. So we looked at the first definition. It's a transitive verb to do what is required, what is necessary to bring about or achieve something that is expected, desired, or promised. Second, it's a transitive verb to do what is necessary to carry out a commitment to the letter. Third is a transitive verb to be good enough or the type necessary to meet a standard or requirement. This really gets down to the realization that Yahusha walked out of the pages of the Torah. He represents the Torah. He is the living word of God, which therefore he is the Torah. And as Yahusha, he is Yahweh saving us. So he is of the type necessary, and he is good enough to meet the standard because he is the standard. The fourth definition of fulfill, by the way, none of those help Christianity. They all work in favor of the point that Yahusha was making, which is opposed to Christianity, opposed to the Christian apologist, opposed to Paul. It is a transitive verb to supply the full amount of something from covering a debt by completely paying it off, or by producing everything promised, necessary, or required. So it's a transitive verb to supply the full amount of something, from covering a debt by completely paying it off, or by producing everything promised, necessary, or required. So once again, we have a definition of fulfill that is opposed to the Christian interpretation and consistent with how Yahusha was using it in this statement. Consistent with what Yahweh has told us about the ongoing nature of his Torah. The next and final definition of fulfill is one where half of that definition could fit the Christian definition. It is a transitive verb to do what is necessary to complete something, or to bring something to an end. To complete something would mean that Yahweh has steps that he is providing to his home, and he is completing what needs to be done to achieve what he has promised. But to bring something to an end is the Christian definition. And so of these five definitions of fulfill, transitive verb, to do what is required to bring about or achieve something expected, desired, or promised, one. A transitive verb, to do what is necessary to carry out a commitment to the letter, in other words, to honor the promises made in the covenant, that would be number two. A transitive verb, to be good enough or the type necessary to meet a standard or requirement, we'll just call that three, even though there's 2 points there. Four, a transitive verb to supply the full amount of something, from covering a debt to completely paying it off, or by producing everything promised, necessary, or required. Those are 2 points there, but let's just call it one. That's five. And this last one is six and seven. Transitive verb to do what is completely required to complete something or to bring an end to something. So of the seven potential definitions of fulfill, only one of the seven fits the Christian view of this particular passage. I didn't come to do away with the Torah, but instead to fulfill it. So when we return to Shattering Myths, we're going to discuss what is a transitive verb and what does that mean in this context as it relates to fulfill. And then we'll bring it all together and explain why the Messiah was necessary, even with the Torah enduring forever. Oh, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were digging a bit into grammar. We've had a great deal of fun examining Hebrew grammar, so why not take a whack at English grammar? Well, I say we've had a lot of fun with Hebrew grammar. Hebrew grammar is what answers the Yah's perspective on his Torah. When the Christian says, "What does that have to do with us?" It's only for Jesus and not for anyone else. Well, it's Hebrew grammar that resolves that issue because Hayah, which is the very basis of Yahweh's name, Yah, when he introduces himself to us, tells us his name is based upon the Hebrew verb Hayah. Hayah means to exist. It means was, is, and always will be. But beyond it, to the fact that it's Hayah used here in relationship to the Torah, there is no past, present, and future tense in Hebrew. So grammatically, when we talk about Hebrew, we're always talking about verbs always being true. Was true, is true, shall always be true. So God is saying there's only one Torah teaching that has and shall always exist for both the naturally born person and for the visitor or a person from different races, countries, and cultures. So from God's point of view, this is a non-issue. The Christian apologist is wrong. Paul is wrong. The Torah is right. But now we turn to English grammar to understand what is a transitive verb, because every definition of fulfill speaks of it being a transitive verb. So I looked it up. A transitive verb occurs when the action addresses a direct object. And it always has to address a direct object. In this case, the direct object of the verb fulfill is it. What is it? It is the Torah which permeates the prophets. Yah's teaching, his direction, his guidance. That is what it is. So a transitive verb addresses a direct object, in this case it, addressing Yahweh's testimony, his teaching and guidance in the Torah and prophets. Therefore, Yahweh will bring about the desired and expected promises of his Torah guidance and prophetic predictions. He will do whatever is required to achieve the promised results. That's what it means in this case. And logically, now there's a second aspect of a transitive verb. So it's not just relational, forming a relationship between the action of the verb and its direct object, in this case, the Torah teaching. A transitive verb is also a form of rhetoric that expresses a logical relationship. A transitive statement addresses and establishes a relationship between things, revealing things which are similar or equivalent. So, when Yahusha said, "I have not come to do away with the Torah and prophets, but instead to completely fulfill it," what we see is that these things are equivalent. Not doing away with and completely fulfilling are equivalent statements. That's what a transitive verb means. Therefore, God, by this very statement in context, has said that you cannot define fulfilling as doing away with. So, just Yahusha's statement in context completely invalidates Paul's writings regarding it and the Christian view of the Torah. I have not come to invalidate or to do away with the Torah and prophets. That's the part of the equivalence. But instead, the other half of the equivalence, to completely fulfill it. So we have completely resolved this issue. Why the Messiah was necessary when the Torah exists forever and is for all people and is the means of our salvation, the only means to the covenant, which means it's the only means to engage in a relationship with God. There is no access to the covenant or presentation to the covenant outside of the Torah. There is no presentation of God's path from our world to his home and thus to eternal life and redemption and adoption into his family, apart from the Torah's presentation of this guidance, of these things. And so what God is saying is, yes, while the Torah is my promise to you, while it is the means of being adopted into my family, while it is the means of me enriching you and empowering you and causing you to be redeemed and to live forever, perfecting you, enabling you to grow, that it is my guidance for all of these things, that I have made promises in my Torah that I intend to honor, that I intend to fulfill, that I intend to enable. And that's what he's saying. And so the purpose of the Maaseiyah, which is the work of Yahweh, which is what Maaseiyah means, and of Yahusha, which means that he's Yahweh saving us, his purpose is to fulfill, to honor, to enable the promises that God has made to us in his Torah. And so God is saying, all right, I want to redeem you. To redeem means to buy you back. I want to pay the price to resolve the penalty that you would otherwise pay. How can he do that and be just? He can't just obliterate the crime and have no consequence of ignoring his guidance. So what did he do? He himself, which is what Yahusha means, it is what Maaseiyah means, he himself paid the price. He himself redeemed us. And so he made the promise to do so. He revealed the teaching and guidance regarding his promise to do so. And then he honored his promise by becoming Yahusha, by becoming the Maaseiyah, so that we could benefit from him paying off our obligation, for him honoring his promise, for him completing what was required to be done. That is the purpose of the Maaseiyah. So, we were considering all of these statements. We first have Yahusha and his Sermon on the Mount saying, "Do not assume that I have come to weaken, to dismantle, to invalidate, to abolish, to do away with the Torah and prophets. I have not come to do away with it, but instead to completely fulfill it. Truly, I say to you, until the heavens and earth pass away, not one jot, not the smallest aspect of any Hebrew letter or tittle, which is the horn or stroke of the of many Hebrew letters. So not one part of any Hebrew letter, which comprise the words in Hebrew that comprise the Hebrew Torah, shall be ignored, shall be disregarded from what was established in the Torah teaching until the time and place it all happens. Therefore, whoever dismisses, invalidates, or abolishes the least of these terms and conditions, or teaches people to do the same, they will be called the least dignified in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever performs them and teaches them, they will be called the greatest and most important in the kingdom of heaven." The Maaseiyah Yahusha picked this same theme up again, also in the same public declaration, this time in the context of seeking the truth so that we can make an informed choice. And this is what he went on to say in his Sermon on the Mount. "Ask, making an earnest request, and it shall be given to you as a gift. Seek, diligently searching for knowledge, and you will discover the truth. And you will find what you're looking for. Knock, requesting acceptance at the door, and it will be open for you. For then all who make an earnest request to receive will be accepted. And those who actively search for the location for knowledge, who really desire to learn, will know the truth. And those who request acceptance at the door will be granted entrance. What is the door? It is Passover. Where do you search for knowledge? That is the Torah. And it is through this whole process that we come to know, not believe, that we come to be admitted as opposed to being rejected. It is the doorway that we walk through." And so this is in Matanyah, where Yahusha is delivering his most important message. We have Jack calling from Louisiana, and then we're going to return probably in the last segment to Jason in Pennsylvania. Hello, Jack. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
Hi. See if I got this straight. Adam and Eve were the first two humans that were made in the image of the Creator, correct?
Yes, but that's probably not enough information. Humankind, as in Homo sapien, existed outside of the garden, while the garden was in existence, but the thing that made Adam and Chawa, it's not Eve, Eve is the name of a pagan sun goddess, it's one of the many corruptions in the English Bibles, the thing that made Adam and Chawa unique was the addition of a Nesalma. So the one thing that made them in God's image and unique was that amongst all animals with a soul, is that Yahweh gave Adam and Chawa a Nesalma. And a Nesalma is very similar to the English word conscience, where soul is a consciousness. A Nesalma would be a conscience, which is a seat of judgment, the ability to discern right and wrong, truth from that which is false. So that's a more complete presentation.
Let me get this straight. There were other Homo sapien type people, but they were just animals. Do they still exist today?
Yes, that's another good question. When the flood occurred in Mesopotamia, what Yahweh said is that he eliminated all but eight of the humans with a Nesalma. And so it tells us that those who bred with Adam, Chawa, and their child, inherited the Nesalma. And so the question is, since that time and since the eight people who got off the ark began to intermarry with Homo sapiens without a Nesalma, have we reached the point where every human has a conscience? You know, there's some ways to look at it. When you look at the lack of judgment that the people and the lack of morality exhibited by people today, you'd say, well, maybe there are people that without a conscience, without a judgment today. I don't know the answer to the question. I suppose that there could be, but we don't know for certain. Jack, why don't you hold on, and we'll return to you after the break. And Jason, we'll try to get to you after the break as well. This is Shattering Myths. Thank you for listening. Segment of Shattering Mist. We've had Jack on the line as well as is Jason from Pennsylvania. Jack in Louisiana wanted to know about Adam and Chawa as to whether or not they were the only humans in Yahweh's image at the time that they were conceived, and they were only because that Yahweh gave Adam and Chawa a Nesalma, which is a conscience, and that the humans outside of the garden did not have a Nesalma. The evidence, both from archaeology and the evidence from Scripture, is unequivocal in this regard, that Homo sapien is just another animal. All animals have souls. The only thing that made Adam and Chawa unique is a conscience, which is a seat of judgment, the ability to exercise good judgment. All right, Jack, with that explanation, did you have another question about Adam and Chawa and what made them unique?
Yeah, I have probably the hardest question of all for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Was Adam and Chawa of the pure white genetic line?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, let me answer that question, and then we'll go on to Jason. There is absolutely no racial indication of who people belong to regarding race, other than the descendants of Abraham. Ultimately comprising Yehudim, which symbolically means related to Yah. But even with them, the distinction between the Yehudim and those who became Muslims and Arabs is of very small significance, because Abraham and Sarah were both Babylonians. Racially, they came from what ultimately, after Babylon, became Assyria, and after Assyria became Persia. With them becoming the chosen people, it's just really because of the relationship they established with Yah. God is not a bigot. He's not into racial determinations. There will be no, there's no consideration from his perspective of, from a racial perspective. So that's really going in the wrong direction. That answered, I'd like to turn to, Jason. Jason, it was your question that we devoted so much time to trying to answer this morning. Was I able to explain why the Maaseiyah was required to honor the Torah's promises?
Yada, bless you. Absolutely, 100%. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that you took so much time out of your time, your very valuable time, to, you know, really expound it in a way that I think a lot of us had questions about, you know, that were... I guess at this point I would call myself a recovering Christian.
There you go.
I have certain beliefs that I'll probably hold to till my grave, but you are expanding my knowledge in a very, very important way, and I just want to say thank you for taking the time for explaining it.
Well, thank you, Jason. And realistically here, I think you asked a very good question. I have never heard the question posed that way before, but Paul takes the view of the other view. In fact, the whole ploy that Paul uses in his letter, and when I finally came to understand Paul, was when I came to realize that that he wants to go from the covenant being created with Abraham directly to his Christ and bypass the Torah, so that the promises inherent in the covenant skip over the Torah and are enabled through his Christ without ever touching the Torah, meaning that making
right.
the Torah irrelevant. That's Paul's ploy. But the problem, of course, with that is that the covenant is presented in only one place, which is the Torah. And unless you understand what Yahweh has promised through his seven called out assemblies to meet with him, through his seven meetings, which take us from this world to his home, if you don't understand the connection between what Yahusha said and did relative to the Torah's promises, then you have no idea who he is or what he did.
And so
your question takes it from the opposite perspective, but it is the same issue that Pauline doctrine is predicated. So I was really pleased to have your question and the opportunity to answer it. I hope you do call in again, Jason. Well, thank you all for listening to this version of an edition of Shattering Myths. I hope that none of you go out and vote today for the lesser of two evils, and I hope to meet with you at this time again tomorrow.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good